Friends,
as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is Are We Bound by Fate? Fate or destiny is the word which we use when we are not aware of the rationality of the situation. We don't know the reason why this has happened. So we then attribute it to fate or destiny. Even the Greeks have a word, fate and fortune, where fate is something which is predetermined and fortune is completely undeterminate. Christians, right from the time of St. Augustine, have the doctrine of predestination, where they say that some elect among men, they have been predestined to salvation by God, and the others have been predestined to damnation. And John Calvin also followed the same doctrine, saying, as a tree falls, so shall it fly. That means, without taking into account the merit or demerit of the person, it is God's will which predestines some to heaven and others to hell. And unfortunately, kismat also is taken to mean the will of God or will of Allah. Again, in Hindu philosophy, you have many words for fate. There is destiny. Then the word is kala, which means appropriate time. We say this kala had come when somebody dies. Then there is a word called vidhi, which means ordinance. And there is a word called daiva. There is a little story about a boy who dies of snake bite. The snake says, I did not kill the boy. It was Yama, the god of death. Yama says, I did not kill him. It was Kala. His time was right. And Kala says, I did not kill the boy because it was his karma or fate. Now very truly, very correctly, therefore, fate has been correlated with karma. Karma is action and reaction, cause and effect. It is that law which traces back the effect to its cause and establishes disturbed harmony. But we know, at least in Hindu philosophy, they speak about three kinds of karma. And this is beautifully, as it were, brought home through the illustration or analogy of bowman who shoots an arrow. Another arrow he makes ready on the bow to shoot, and there is a bundle of arrows which is on his back in the quiver. Now the arrow which is shot, it is gone out of hand. He has no control over it. Similarly, the arrow which are there on his back, which represent sanchit karma, over that also he has no control. Only what he is about to shoot, he can decide whether to shoot or not to shoot. This is completely, as it were, sort of symbolical, and we must understand therefore that the arrow which is shot, already gone out of hand, is prarabdha karma. It is karma which has begun to precipitate. The arrows which are in the quiver and they represent the sanchita karma, karma which are stored. They are described as karma for which yet the conditions and circumstances are not right when they can precipitate. Master of Wisdom describes this sanchita karma as vapor which is held in suspension in the atmosphere, and when the time is right, then this will get condensed and fall on the earth in the form of rain. So that is sanchita karma, which Patanjali calls as mental deposits, for which the environment, the inner and the outer environment, when it is right, will this karma come to fruition. And we know that there are different kinds of seeds. Some seeds, they grow pretty quickly and also bear fruit pretty quickly. And we all know how a mango seed would take such a long time that we say if one generation has planted it, the fruit of it will be sort of enjoyed only by the next generation. So this karma, sanchita karma, is the stored up karma. But there again we see that it is stored up till the condition is right, and many times it is stored up for very little time. So for instance, you eat stale food, and depending upon the gravity, as it were, you will have stomach ache maybe in 1 hour, 3 hours, or maybe next day in the morning. But one is able to see the result coming very quickly. On the other hand, a person who is a chain smoker in his younger age, he sees that he would probably develop lung cancer, throat cancer, or some sort of a throat irritation which is chronic kind. And here we see the karma was really taking time to precipitate or ripen. It took some few years, but many times we say it has to be stored up for several incarnations for various reasons. For instance, we say so long as you are in a male body, your karma of having to have experience of motherhood will have to wait. Similarly, some karma has to be sanchita or stored up because the other ego with whom we have created the karma must also come into our life. And it may be several incarnations before we are again brought together, and then that karma remains as sanchita karma, stored up karma. Now, agami karma is the arrow which we are holding. It's the karma which we are making now. And as soon as we make, it will become part of sanchita karma. And then there is prarabdha. As we said, it's like the arrow shot. And that is the karma for which the field is ready. It has begun to precipitate. And the example we give is that the very fact that one is born in a male or a female body, one is born to certain pair of parents, one is born in certain nation or to certain race, in certain caste and religion, all this becomes like prarabdha. Prarabdha is another name which we use for fate or destiny. It is my prarabdha, meaning it is my destiny, because the thing has already happened. Now, Mr. Judge, of course, has given another definition of this fate or destiny. Not only is it karma which has precipitated, but it has precipitated because there was no way it could have been stopped. It could have been altered. It could have been obstructed. So he says destiny is the English word applied to karma so strong and overpowering that its action cannot be counteracted by other karma. But in the sense that all happenings are under karma, then all things are destined as they occur. So one sense in which we can use the word destiny is, as soon as we have had a certain desire, as soon as we have acted, it's become our destiny. Because we have acted. You can't really change the act. As I think Muhammad Paigambar said, or it is a Turkish proverb which says that your unspoken words thou canst at any day say or speak, but thy spoken words thou canst never again unsay. So once you speak something, harshly or nicely, but it is gone. And we always say it's like arrow shot from the bow. So in that sense it is prarabdha. But in a more technical sense, what is that fate or destiny? It is irreversible karma. Karma which cannot be altered, it cannot be obstructed, it cannot be stopped. And simple examples come to our mind. that several years back, when there was no remedy for, say, diabetes, for that matter, even for cancer or TB, once that you know that you have TB or diabetes, it was but destiny that you will suffer and you will die. Similarly, in the earlier days when it was impressed on the mind of the girl and the whole society more or less supported that belief that once a girl gets married, her home is her husband's home. Only from that husband's home, only her arthi, that is her dead body, can come out, but she cannot leave. With such belief and add to it, if the parents of this girl who is married are so poor that they can't really afford to have her back and support her and feed her, then what used to happen? The person feels completely cornered. No matter what the in-laws are, no matter what the husband is like, there is no other go but to be in that family and work out your destiny, as it were, because this is karma so powerful. Unless of course she commits suicide or decides to run away, come what may. But normally, this is one of the circumstances in those days where you work out your karma. Take the case of a paralytic person also. So helpless that you can just quietly bear the ill treatment or kind of negligence of people who are looking after you or not looking after you at all. That is another situation where one needs to, as it were, quietly bear without being able to do anything about it. So this is a kind of a way in which we can understand, oh, it is fated, it is destined, it is destiny, and that helplessness of not being able to do anything. But the whole of it is not in this sense at all. Destiny is, of course, first and foremost, we need to understand that destiny is not the word applied to somebody out there, a God, whose will is at work in getting you what you are suffering or enjoying. Our destiny is written in the stars, but not the way in which we understand. We understand astrology as talking about planets and stars, which determine what's going to happen in our lives. We say planets influence, without understanding that planets only indicate. They don't make us undergo this and that suffering. So who is it that is weaving the destiny, the web of destiny? We ourselves weave the web of destiny. How do we do that? We do it through our moment-to-moment thoughts, emotions, desires, and actions. And that is why we are told in the next quotation, sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. And we are able to see that it's not a question of a single act or a single thought or a desire. It looks like it must be a chain. Over a period of time, it becomes what it becomes. And that is why we may take the example, say, of a person who smokes his first cigarette. Very self-confident, thinking that when I want, I can quit. Then, after a few days, he feels, I can even have 2 cigarettes a day. Then it becomes 3 and 4 and 5 and 7. And then, before he knows, there is very little control, there is very little will which he can exert in overcoming, and he's become a chain smoker. Now this is avoidable fate. Something at one point in time, he could have put his foot down and quit, but he doesn't do. And therefore it carries on, it multiplies. And this is exactly like a spider weaving the web. So, it's a very graphic symbology which HPB gives. Those who believe in karma have to believe in destiny, which from birth to death, every man is weaving thread by thread around himself as a spider does his cobweb. When the last strand is woven and man is seemingly enwrapped in the network of his own doing, then he finds himself completely under the empire of his self-made destiny. So one, it is self-made. Two, seemingly enwrapped in the network of his own doing. And all this happens when the last strand is woven. In between, at every step, there is a choice to quit, come out, and avoid making this sort of a destiny. A robber becomes a robber, but it's over a period of time. First, it is small things that he may rob, and then bigger things, and then finally he becomes a kind of a big robber. He could have avoided, but it piles up, it builds like the threads of a spider. And then when the last strand, it's like the tipping point. It's too late now. And yet it is not absolutely late to even undo that destiny. But yes, it has become now your destiny. You have become a chain smoker, you have become a robber, you have become a murderer, you have become a liar. But it is what we have brought upon ourselves. And we are seemingly entrapped, which is very important, that even this destiny can really not put us down forever. Now, the first thing then, whenever something happens, we say that before you make a choice, you have free will, whether to do it or not to do it. But having made the choice, now it has become to a certain extent your destiny. And when then any circumstances come, anything that happens in life, we say it is destiny. And the first thing that we are told, that if you want to overcome this destiny, these consequences which have come to us, we need to learn, instead of grumbling and complaining, to accept. One of the things that we do is, see, the agency through which it has come. If it is our parents, if it is the colleague in the office, then we try to put a blame on those people. We try to even blame circumstances. If only I was born to rich parents, I could have joined the classes, I could have got first class, then I could have chosen this career, and then I would have got this post. I would not have been in a clerical post like this. So finally, it is again coming to the circumstances, people, and then endless grumbling. HPB says, one day spent without grumbling, and what a gain it would be. But the thing therefore to do is to be able to say, this is what I deserved. My own has come back to me. Mr. Judge goes a step further. He says that, look at it from the point of view of your soul, from your ego, not the personality. The personality has the tendency to rebel. But look at it from the point of view of your soul, and it is your soul which really desired this situation so that you can learn something from it. So from the point of view of soul, if you can identify yourself with your soul, with your parent, it is saying, this is what I not only deserved, but in fact desired. The whole attitude then is of complete self-surrender. The whole attitude is then of complete faith in the law of karma. It has come to me because I did something in the past which I don't remember, but it has come to me because I can get something out of it. In a sense, I can become a better person. I can change as a result of this happening if I so wish. And the important side of it is that if we take this attitude, one, We don't complicate the karma. We don't further, as it were, get involved in this web of destiny and make it complex. But if we can take this attitude, we will also not run to Babas, Swamis, astrologers, this god and that goddess. That is what most people today are doing. Either it is astrologer who will be telling you to make this ring of copper, gold, silver, use garnet or onyx or opal or whatever stone. He will also tell you 21 days fasting or 21 Thursdays fasting, certain ceremony or ritual and so on and so forth. We are ready to do all that. So at least we find that if we take the attitude that my own has come back and let me see what I can do with it. Now when we say that it is destiny and you say accept the woes of birth, that's not like John Calvin said, as a tree falls, so shall it lie. It's a kind of a passive attitude. What is being said is that you must make an attempt to change the situation. Now here again, we have to take into account two or three important factors. One, when we say you can change the situation, try to change the situation, the thing to remember is, let us take legitimate means. Otherwise, we will further complicate the karma. Take again the simple example of a disease. One is suffering from a disease. And then what happens? You can go to an Ayurveda, homeopath, allopath. But today people are so impatient that for trifling things, they would go in for mental healing, they would go for pranic healing, they would go to Christian scientists. All these metaphysical healing, we know. What happens? Probably the disease goes temporarily, but it is displaced to some other organ. Or we have replanted disease for future use, and therefore the seeds of the disease lie lurking in the mind to come back again in the same life or in some other life. Another example which we can take is that of childlessness. Again, see what has happened. All those medical treatments, they are fine. But how much we have interfered in a way the process of creation, in the process of creation. You have in vitro fertilization. There is surrogate mothers. So absolutely the sperm of the father and sometimes even the egg comes from the surrogate mother. And then she becomes the vehicle for carrying that baby. And then you have a child. First of all, look at the complexity of karma. Secondly, it may be that so many of these embryos which are formed, they are not planted in the womb and they are thrown away. So that is again a question to be answered. And we want the baby at any cost. Very likely that by doing that we are only postponing the karma of being childless. So in some life, again it will come back. This may not be the legitimate means for overcoming our destiny of being childless. Now, there's the other factor we said. Yes, we try. And many times the question also arises, how long should I try to change the situation? The other day somebody had come to speak to us and that lady said that her husband has duped her of crores of rupees. Now he is trying to take away my child also and he has gone to the court and she has filed a suit against him. Now it's been going on at least now for 10 to 12 years. What should I do? It was really thinking aloud. And one of the things that is being said about karma is that suppose a long nail is driven inside a piece of wood? We don't know. We have not seen. We are asked to take it out. So, whether it has gone inside 1 inch, whether it is 10 inches inside the wood, or whether it is 5 inches, we don't know. So we keep making effort. Now, yes, on the one hand, we do say that if you fail, then as the quotation from Mahabharata says, you must redouble your effort. And again, redouble your effort till you succeed. Try till you succeed. But it need not all happen in the same incarnation. So, on the other hand, the student feels it is equally true what is said by Socrates, that there is no failure in unavoidable surrender. To know when to give up struggle, that also is a triumph. Suppose you take the example of someone who is trying to get the job, which is a position of an officer. The person might be only a clerk. He or she makes application for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 7 years. Everywhere, either the person is not called for interview, or if he is called for interview, he is not selected. Somehow or the other, it just doesn't work out. And in the process, a lot of energy goes in that direction. In fact, the person can do something more useful or worthwhile. Already he has a post, which is well-paying post, and he doesn't need necessarily a more amount of money. Then why not? Why not quit at one point and say, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's not in my destiny. Even if it is so, I don't want to waste any more energy in that direction. Instead, I can take up some other study. I can do some other work which is of use, which will help in my growth or whatever it is. So, such a situation, two things. One, whatever you do, it must be legitimate effort, legitimate direction, legitimate method must be used for changing your destiny. And secondly, how long are you going to try is a very crucial question. Many times people are completely drained psychologically, psychically, even mentally and financially, in just trying to get a particular result. So, we don't know how long the nail has gone inside. And as we say, this is not only applicable to situation. Changing the destiny also is applicable to the very character. Aren't we working on our character also? We are not supposed to be passive and say, I'm made like that. Many people say that also. I'm hot tempered. Oh, I can't do anything. I'm made like that. Oh, she tells a lie. I'm made like that. Of course not. Why are we here for? If everything is destined, why do I try to be a good person? Why do I struggle to be learning to speak truth instead of lie? Be honest and all these things. And there also we are told the same thing. We don't know what is the load which we carry from the past. So a thought, reap an act, then habit and then character. And for many, many incarnations, suppose we have been following the wrong path, then let us not be foolish and think that by making one superhuman effort, I will change overnight. In a year, in 5 years, in 10 years, I will change myself and become a saint. No. In fact, we are told that would be foolishness, because a great opposition reaction will be faced. Just like a person who wants to be a bodybuilder, weightlifter, he will start first with 1 kilogram weight, then 2 kilogram, then 5 kilogram. He will not at once try lifting 30 or 50 kg. He will kind of damage his muscles and tissues. The same thing is true, therefore, also in trying to change the destiny in the terms of character or even circumstances. Now, there are times, therefore, when we are not able to succeed. And in fact, there are situations where we can see there is no go, as we gave so many examples about disease, about even certain relationships with people. and there is no way that you can come out of it, then what can't be cured must be endured in a proper sense. And then the thing to do is to find out. Now that it has happened and I have tried my best to change it, what can I do? And then we say you have to give it a right response. The right response is first, be ready to go through it. Maybe I'll have to bear it till the end of my life, so be it, I'm ready to do it. And secondly, let me see what is the lesson to be learned. After all, we are told that nothing happens just like that, and nothing happens without reason. So there is something to be learned. Many times, as a lady said, that my father was short-tempered. I got married, my husband was short-tempered. I took a job, my boss was short-tempered. And I said, why is this happening to me? And then, of course, she was herself, not very tolerant person. And then she thought, maybe I am supposed to set an example. First, I learned to absorb the shock which these people give me by being short-tempered. But I give my response rather than reaction. So she took to meditation. Then, of course, she went into detail. She became a life coach and became an extremely calm person so that she could handle people. Maybe that was very crucial at that stage for the soul to learn calmness and to handle people with temperament. So that is what she had to learn. And we know in life there are hundreds of things each one of us has to learn. In fact, it is said for the Chelas that there are no trifling circumstances in your life. The smallest of thing that happens, the companion saying something to you, the co-worker, or a small instance happening in your life, everything has to be seen in a deeper context, because everything has got some deeper implication. The moment you try to live the spiritual life, don't brush it aside. Any happening as being not of consequence. So there is learning which is there. Some people not only try and see what I have to learn, sometimes it is calmness I have to learn, sometimes it is honesty, sometimes it is perseverance, sometimes it is courage, so that again and again I face situations where my courage is tested. Sometimes it is learning to handle human relationships and so on. But more than that, sometimes people not only learn, but they, as it were, change the situation to their own advantage and kind of many times also set an example for other people. On the lighter side, we have often shared with you the something which comes in the book Tom Sawyer. We know how he was a naughty boy and he was asked to paint a long wall, compound wall, by his aunt. Now, Tom Sawyer obviously didn't like to do that painting, but he saw his friends calling him to come and play. And he said, no, no, there is something very interesting. So he wouldn't answer and he just waved his hand and started painting, almost as if it was the best thing in the world that he could do. So he started painting with a lot of interest. He would go, distance himself, look at the wall, how it was, go and again do the same patch and so on. Now the friends thought, really, this must be an interesting thing. So they all came and they said, let me also paint. And he would say, no, 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 I would never allow anybody to do that. And they started bribing him. One gave him apple, another gave him some colored pieces of glass, the third gave marbles. At the end, he was a rich man. So he was sitting and eating apple while the friends were one by one taking turns in painting the wall. So here he was. The whole situation, which was supposed to be grim, was now turned to his own advantage. Another very on the other opposite end of the scale is the example of a person, Viktor Frankl. We know he, with hundreds and thousands of people, then was in the concentration camp. Now, it can break any person. You don't even expect them to keep their poise. Some have been able to keep poise, some broke down, some just gave up and died, some grumbled. But here was a man who not only kept his poise and calmness and went through the tortures of concentration camp, but he came out really a rich man, having a deep insight into life. And he's the one who gave that beautiful sentence where he says, "He who has a why to live for can live with almost anyhow." So he has written a book, Man's Search for Meaning, and this whole thing called logotherapy. Logotherapy is something which deals with the meaning of life. How each one has to learn to give meaning to their own lives. Now, the whole of it, instead of being weighed down by something as bad as tortures of concentration camp, he simply studied life. He simply studied people one by one as they died, and those who valiantly could carry on like him. He studied all that. And he said, "I came out because I had a why to live for. I wanted to come out and tell the world that even that cannot be so strong as to break us down. It is up to us what we do." And so, we will not be able to read all these other quotations, but one from Rubaiyat is important, again in the sense that it seems to suggest that many times we feel that repentance and our understanding of repentance is only crying and feeling bad about what we have done, and therefore self-reproach. That is not going to change karma. We have to take steps to change karma. We have to set into motion fresh good action. If we have been torturing another, then now we have to become a better person. We have to take our nature into our own hands, learn to be compassionate, sympathetic, and the moment we do that, we are trying to overcome the destiny. But it's not simply by what they call as repentance, confession. So he says, "The moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Nor all thy piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line. Nor all thy tears wash out a word of it." So, what will do the work is fresh good karma. Because we are told that when the karma is precipitating, and if the good and the bad karma come to fruition at the same time, then they will cancel each other's effect. Also, they say in the law of karma, what works is the parallelogram of forces, where the good and the bad, and the sum total, or as it were, the resultant of it, is what you experience. It doesn't get cancelled, but at least it is mitigated, it is alleviated to some extent by our effort to become better. Now, therefore, destiny is not really fatalism or what has happened, what can I do, it's my kismat. It's not that passive attitude at all. And man can never get determined by his destiny. And that is how we can say that free will and destiny can coexist. And we can first look at what Viktor Frankl has said. He has coined the term pan-determinism. He says, "By that I mean the view of man which disregards his capacity to take a stand towards any conditions whatsoever. Man is not fully conditioned and determined, but rather determines himself whether he gives in to conditions or stands up to them. In other words, man is ultimately self-determining. Man does not simply exist, but always decides what his existence will be, what he will become in the next moment. Every human being has the freedom to change at any instant. How can we dare to predict the behavior of man? We may dare to predict the movements of a machine, of an automaton. More than this, we may even try to predict the mechanisms of dynamisms of the human psyche as well. But man is more than psyche. At any point in time, we have in our hand the will, the freedom to do something different. And therefore, connected with this point is the other point, that many times just because the astrologer or some saintly person is able to predict the future event, people feel that destiny, it's fatalism. You can't do anything about it. It is so fixed, and that is why he is able to predict. But that's not the thing. We are given an illustration that if a person A is asked to take or choose from two courses of action, if he takes first course of action where it is very simple, but in the end he will be punished. The other course of action, if he takes, it is difficult, but in the end he is rewarded. Now person B, who knows the psyche of A very well, knows that this is a man who is ready. He likes challenges. He likes difficulties. So he will definitely take B, though it is difficult, but in the end there is a reward. So he writes down the choice that A is likely to make. And sure enough, A makes that choice. Then he opens the paper and sees that B had predicted. So the person who has written this says this doesn't mean that because B could predict it, therefore A was, as it were, forced to, it was predetermined that he will make a choice. No. B knew the psyche of A. B knew that at least 95% this man is going to go in this direction. Similarly, we are told that there are certain, first of all, the effect is wrapped up in the cause. If we have set into motion certain causes, which are so powerful, which are so well determined, that a person who can look at these causes in the astral, he can tell with certainty that such and such thing will happen. At a simple level, we are given the example that if a doctor knows the woman has conceived near about this date, then he will be able to, and pretty accurately he will say, this is the date when you will give birth to a child, 9 months, more or less. And similarly, if you are drawing a semicircle, and if you give, what is the center of the circle and what is the radius, another person can complete the circle. So these are the parameters. The parameters are known to a yogi, a saintly person, even an intuitive astrologer. Because of certain causes which are so well marked that one is able to predict the future event. It doesn't mean that what can I do? It was going to happen anyway. Now here, the important thing is, first of all, as it is said, he who knows what is the ultimate division of time in this universe knows karma. But its action may be known by calculation from cause to effect. And this calculation is possible because the effect is wrapped up in and is not subsequent to the cause. So looking at the cause, one is able to predict the effect. And secondly, why we are not able to? It has not yet happened. Can I not do something so that that effect will not, as it were, take shape or precipitate? Now here, HBB says, yes, you have free will, but that free will is also restricted or limited by internal and external condition. Man is a free agent during his stay on earth, There are external and internal conditions which affect the determination of our will upon our actions. So, of course, I have the freedom in this life to become a doctor. But supposing I am born in a very poor family, and in my karmic causes, there is no cause where I have merited scholarship or financial aid from somebody outside, then though I may be intelligent, though I may be worthy, I cannot become a doctor. So this becomes my destiny, determined by my external condition. On the other hand, I might have all the riches, I might be intelligent, but what if my psychic temperament is such that I faint at the sight of blood? Then, again, you can see that I cannot do any dissections. I'm so faint-hearted that though I might theoretically understand everything, I would not be able to become a doctor. This is a very simple, crude example. But this is internal condition. And there it was external condition. So, though we say free will, our free will itself is determined by what we have done in the past. As we took the example earlier, that you may want to change your nature, but that nature which may be so rough and rowdy, or that nature which is so emotional, or that nature which is very prone to anger, you have got it with you. And today, if you therefore want to become like a Buddha, a compassionate person, you have the will. Alright, you will start working towards it, but surely you know that in this life you cannot become as compassionate as Buddha or as compassionate like any other saintly person. So, our free will itself is limited, it is itself restricted. And this is beautifully, as it were, put forward through a simile by Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, who says that if you have tethered a cow, you have tied a cow to a pole, it's a very long rope. And the cow feels she is absolutely free to grow anywhere. But you know, she can go about as far as the length of the rope will allow. The same thing is true. The length of the rope is not determined by God. In our case, the length of the rope is determined by our past karma, by our past kandas, by our past vasanas. And that is why in the Gita we know how Shri Krishna tells Arjuna that you may resist, you may determine and say, I will not fight, but the principle of thy nature will impel thee to fight. Now this principle of thy nature is the vasana. He is a kshatriya and he has brought the rajasic tendency, and therefore it will, as it were, impel him to fight. He cannot be like a Brahmin and say, I will preach but not fight. That is the Rajasika nature which he has brought, Kshatriya nature which he has brought. And at last, that will make him, impel him, compel him to fight. Of course, in this life then he can work on the Kshatriya nature and he can make his nature into a Brahminical nature and so on. But that is an altogether a different thing. So, our free will itself is limited. Now, lastly, time is running out, and lastly we may see that this whole thing also holds true for other people. Just like we don't passively take what happens to us as fate, kismat, we should not similarly have attitude in other people's pain and suffering. In fact, Mr. Judge goes to the extent of saying that we are all interconnected. There is nothing like isolated karma. Our karma are also interconnected, and therefore he says that every man's suffering is partly because of yourself. We have been units in the human race for a long, long time, and this unity of the race demands that we recognize that every man's sorrow is partly because of ourselves, and therefore, any time that a person approaches you, it should be your duty to help him physically, financially, mentally, emotionally, morally, in whatever way you can. Otherwise, you, by your act of omission, will become indebted. In fact, you will be punishable for this by the law, law of karma. And lastly, we may say that overcoming destiny in an ultimate sense means to become karmaless. And to be karmaless, to put it briefly, it means, one, doing every action, renouncing attachment to the result of that karma. Whatever result comes, our recent issue of the Theosophical Movement carries question answer, and it is said that this detachment must be cultivated first, not after having done the action. Right from the beginning, have the detachment. It might be good, it may not be what I had expected, but I will still remain calm and in equilibrium position. And of course, other thing is to renounce the karta bhava, to renounce the doership, not have the pride that I have done it. Even if there is a little bit of this sense of I, of doership, of karta bhava, we kind of make an invisible link with karma, and therefore, to reap the consequences, good or bad, we need to come back. So, to become karmaless is to act by renouncing karta bhava and by renouncing attachment to the fruits of action.